Blog Talk Radio.
Hi everyone, welcome to The Whole Scoop. This is a health and wellness radio show where our guests are always highly credentialed. The goal of this program is to present different and sometimes opposite perspectives to allow the listeners to make informed decisions about what might be the right health approach for them. I am your host, Carol Ferraci, a registered licensed dietitian who's practiced for over 30 years and the founder of Naturally Nutrition. You can check me out at www.naturallynutritioninc.com. As a healthcare practitioner, it's important for me to provide you highly qualified guests on a variety of topics in order to promote your own health and wellness. Tonight's show is Eating Out: How Many of Us Really Have a Choice? Please let me remind you that while our guests are highly credentialed on the topic of discussion, it's always recommended to seek medical advice prior to implementing any and all interventions discussed on this program. The call-in number is 347-855-8894. And you can also direct questions and comments at www.blogtalkradio.com/thewholescoop. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Blog Talk Radio. Again, the call-in number is 347-855-8894. We will be taking questions later in the program, and at that time, I will call out the last four digits of your telephone number. If you are calling in with a question, please remember to press the number 1 in order to become part of the queue for questions. I'm very excited to tell you about our guest tonight. We have Amy Myrdal Miller. She is an award-winning registered dietitian, nutritionist, farmer's daughter, highly regarded public speaker, published author, and founder and president of Farmer's Daughter Consulting, an agricultural food and culinary communications firm. During her 20-year career in nutrition, Amy has worked for the agribusiness division of Fleischmann Hillard, Dole Food Company, and California Walnut Commission, and most recently the Culinary Institute of America. Her work experiences have helped her hone her skills in public relations, nutrition marketing and communications, and culinary nutrition. Amy's role with the Culinary Institute of America included planning conferences and leadership retreats for food service, culinary, and healthcare audiences. These events focused on nutrition, health, wellness, and sustainability issues. Amy has been widely recognized for her role in nutrition leadership. She was chosen in May 2014 to give the Lena Francis Cooper Memorial Lecture at the 2015 Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics Food and Nutrition Conference and Expo. She was the 2014 recipient of the Tufts University Friedman School of Nutrition and Science and Policy Nutrition Impact Award, the 2013 recipient of the California Dietetic Association Excellence in Research Award, and a 2007 recipient of the ADDY Award, and the 2003 recipient of the Produce for Better Health Foundation Diamond Crystal Award. Amy is co-author of the Healthy Heart Cookbook for Dummies, the executive editor of Dole 5-A-Day Kids Cookbook, and the nutrition editor of the fourth edition of The Techniques of Healthy Cooking, a textbook for the culinary students published by the Culinary Institute of America. She's also a lead or co-author on 6 culinary nutrition papers. You can follow Amy's insights on farming, food, and flavor issues on Twitter at Amy Myrdal Miller. That's AmyMyrdalMiller. Or at amy@farmersdaughterconsulting.com. Joining Amy tonight, we have Susan Linke. Susan is a registered and licensed dietitian and certified LEAP therapist. She received an MBA from Texas Tech University in Lubbock, Texas, and a Master of Science degree in nutrition from Texas Women's University in Denton, Texas. Susan has received extensive training in immunology, adverse food reactions, and practical application of dietary treatment for food-sensitive patients. Since introducing delayed type food hypersensitivity testing and therapy into her private practice, she has seen firsthand how the proper identification of food and chemical triggers, followed by the implementation of proven, customized lifestyle eating and performance, or LEAP, protocol can help patients with inflammation and recover their health. Considered one of the most experienced CLTs in the country, she is actively involved in the training and mentoring of dietitians who are interested in applying this cutting-edge protocol into their practice. In addition, she is also a frequent lecturer in the local, state, and national levels. Susan approaches nutrition and healthcare from an integrative and functional perspective This is firmly entrenched in the belief that the body has a capability of healing itself. You can find Susan at www.susanlinke.com. With that, let's bring them on. Amy, are you with us?
I am. Hi, Carol.
Hi. Susan, are you there?
I'm here. Nice. Thank you for having me.
I'm so thankful you guys are here. This is fabulous. I kind of want to take a minute to explain to everybody why this topic and why you guys are together. You know, these are huge topics alone, but I wanted to kind of give everybody an overview, a little bit about what I saw happening. As you all know, I'm a physician and I have my own practice, Naturally Nutrition. And when I'm working with people, one of the biggest questions that I always get is, how do I eat out? Because I, too, work with food sensitivities. And when I'm preparing for this show, I realized that, and I'm just going to give you guys a little statistics and we'll kind of get on from there. There are 980,000 restaurant and food service locations in the U.S., and out of that, the food service share of the food dollar is approximately 47%. On top of that, we have 15 million Americans affected with food allergies, and out of that, we have 4% adults and 8% are children. The 2013 sales for food service were projected to be at around $660 billion. So all of that being said, I thought, like, we should put this show together and kind of bring these things together. I know people firsthand, and Susan, you know people firsthand who have difficulty eating out. And Amy, you are so well-versed on the restaurant industry and the things that it's doing, and it's doing new things for healthy eating and healthy menus. I felt like we needed to bring these together, especially since the world of healthy flavors and developed by the Culinary Institutes of America in conjunction, I think, with Harvard, they reviewed the top trends at being something like locally sourced meats and healthy kids menus and gluten-free menus. And so when you see all of that, I see these two areas coming together, and I felt like we really kind of needed to talk about it, especially since eating out is more of an experience and not just a necessity. Would you, Amy, would you not agree?
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, I mean, our attitudes towards eating out and our habits have changed over the years. It used to be that going out to eat at a restaurant was a special occasion, and now it's integrated into our daily lives. And just today, the U.S. government announced some new data showing that spending at restaurants has topped our spending at grocery stores for the first time ever. So, you know, restaurant dining is a critically important part of our lifestyle today.
I didn't even realize that. That is new information. Wow. I didn't realize that we were spending more. Susan, did you realize that?
Yes, I realize it because I speak to clients every day, and clients are wanting to go eat out. It's part of our life. I live in Dallas, Texas, and no matter where you go, no matter what night of the week you go out, there's usually a wait at a restaurant. This is how we live now, is we eat out. It's part of our social structure.
So what, Amy, what are some of the things that the restaurant industry is looking at? Because I know they listen to the consumer and, you know, some of the things that I just mentioned, but how does... I guess I'm kind of looking at the whole picture here, and I'm saying, how does such a large industry just pinpoint the biggest focus and then actually execute something like that and make it successful enough so that the majority of people are satisfied? Because it's food, and it's difficult to satisfy so many people. And Susan, on the other hand of that same kind of question, how is it then do people with food allergy and sensitivity actually become a part of that satisfied group or being able to have a good dining experience?
So, Carol, this is Amy. I'll jump in with the first part of that question. The restaurant industry, you know, it's a huge challenge for them to stay on top of this because we consumers keep chasing the latest diet trend, and the industry thinks, oh, should I be going towards low fat? Should it be low carb? Should it be gluten-free? You know, so you mentioned Worlds of Healthy Flavors earlier in the segment, and that's a conference put together by the Culinary Institute of America and the Harvard School of Public Health to provide science-based guidance to the industry on what are the best changes to make when you're selecting ingredients and creating menus that will contribute to positive public health. So the restaurant industry has been overwhelmingly receptive to science-based guidance, and we, you know, dietitians can feel great about that. But the restaurant also, you know, responds to consumer demand. So there's a lot that's going on out there. I think one of the trends that I feel best about is a large segment of the restaurant industry is looking at how can we put more fruits and vegetables into menu items and on our menus, and that provides great benefit for the consumer from a variety of nutrition and health perspectives.
Okay. And Susan, from a client perspective with food allergy and sensitivity, what is it that you tell your clients that they need to look for as it relates to eating out? And, you know, if you were to pick, say, three top things that you have to do when you're in a restaurant, what would you tell them and how would you tell them? And based on what Amy just said, how does that help you with your clients?
Well, I'm really excited that there's a lot more transparency in our restaurant meals now. I have a gluten sensitivity personally, and a few years ago, it was very difficult to go eat out because the restaurant workers didn't know what foods were gluten sensitive. They didn't even know what that meant. And now I'm finding that most restaurants that I go to have gluten-free options. They have their menus are labeled gluten-free. So the transparency is really coming along, and I'm very excited about that. The waiters and staff are more friendly with people that have allergies, so my patients can come in with a list of the foods that they're allergic or sensitive to and either speak with the wait staff or the chef or the manager and get accommodated for some of their major allergens. My concern, though, is I don't know that a lot of people really realize that you can be sensitive or allergic to just about anything minus baking soda, carbonated water, I mean, just a few things. But you can be allergic or sensitive to vanilla or pepper or just some very innocuous.
You know what,
things
Susan, I'm going to stop you right there for just a second, and I'm
sure.
going to ask you to back up a minute and just for the all intents purposes of the listener, just give a real brief explanation of the difference between an allergy and a sensitivity, okay?
Sure. Allergies are what we typically think of when we've gone to the allergist and they've pricked our backs and looked for welts. That involves an antibody called IgE. It typically causes symptoms like runny nose or hay fever, hives, welts, what we normally think of as allergy. But sensitivities are a lot more systemic. In other words, they can cause migraine headaches or IBS-type symptoms or even rheumatoid arthritis and things like that. So when it's internal and it's systemic, generally it's going to be a food sensitivity, and that is not an allergy. It involves other types of antibodies or even T cells. They can also be delayed, whereas an allergy typically manifests itself very quickly. But I have clients who react to ingredients like olives, so olive oil in something, or vanilla or rosemary or thyme. And those are the types of things that waiters in restaurants have a lot more of a difficult time helping the clients with food sensitivities. Also, if they go to mostly the fast food restaurants, one in particular I'm thinking about, their chicken has 20 different ingredients in it. It has yellow number 6 and milk and soy. And so if people go get a grilled chicken sandwich, they don't realize that that grilled piece of chicken has 20 ingredients in it. So that's the kind of challenge that I have with my clients, is really finding those hidden ingredients in foods.
Okay. I'm going to ask you, Amy, I'm going to send this question out, but I'm going to ask you to hold the answer for a second, because I'm going to give an identification here. But the part of that question would be based on what Susan just said and all the different ingredients. I know that the restaurant industry has already worked on that just by having myself having eaten in different restaurants and also being gluten-free. There's been a lot of work on that end in terms of identifying the major allergens and categorizing them out and looking at the menus. So how complicated is it, or can it be now, trying to also throw in the healthy component? Just hold that question for a second. I want to remind everybody, you're listening to the Whole Scoop Radio Show on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Carol Ferraci, a licensed registered dietitian and founder of Naturally Nutrition, Inc. You can find me at www.naturallynutritioninc.com. Tonight we're talking about eating out, how many of us really have a choice, with Amy Myrdal Miller, founder and president of Farmer's Daughter Consulting, an agricultural food and culinary communications firm. And she was formerly with the Culinary Institutes of America. Also, we have Susan Linke, one of the country's leading authorities on food sensitivity and allergy. You can find Amy at on Twitter at Amy Myrdal Miller, AmyMyrdalMiller, or at Amy@FarmersDaughterConsulting.com, and Susan at www.SusanLinke.com. Okay, Amy.
So, you know, you're asking the question about consumers with sensitivities and allergies, and how challenging is it for the restaurant industry to, serve the needs of those customers. You know, first I can say the industry is in business to keep customers happy and coming back, so they're going to do as much as they can do. Susan talked about the big challenges with the number of ingredients that can be in a single item on a single menu. Item like the grilled chicken on a grilled chicken sandwich at a fast food chain. The benefit of eating at a chain restaurant is they have the resources to put information on their websites and to man call centers so that a diner can do some homework before going to the restaurant to order. But the challenge there is there's a lot of proprietary information and a lot of proprietary formulas that go into their menu items to give them that distinctive flavor and taste that we love. So, sure. You know, while independent restaurants, which is 70% of the U.S. restaurant industry, they don't have the corporate resources, but they are more often in touch with what are the exact ingredients in a dish, how is it prepared. So there's upsides to eating on both sides of the industry, chains versus the independents, but a lot of onus falls onto that diner to know what questions to ask, and then it falls onto the server to communicate clearly with the kitchen and to ask more questions of the diner if he or she needs more information to help them make a safe and informed choice.
Great. Susan, do you direct your clients to call in ahead of time? And is that is that something that you find that they will do regularly?
I do direct my clients to do that. Not all of them take me up on it, but I personally have done that with clients who I know ahead of time are going to a restaurant. And I will talk to their chef, and I have found the chef very accommodating in those situations.
Okay. And when I guess when I'm looking at all of this information, and Amy, I think, you know, what you said was really interesting in that you're right. I mean, there's a lot of proprietary information. And Susan, when you just were talking about food sensitivity and how minute something might be that people don't even realize, that it's not even necessarily minute, might not be the greatest of words, but something that you're not even considering, like vanilla, and Amy, that could be a a real nice ingredient that other people wouldn't be expecting in particular dishes. How is it that somebody with allergies might be able, not necessarily just allergies, but sensitivity, might be able to get that identified? Is it safe for them to, I mean, will they identify certain things, or is it too proprietary? Or
You know, that's probably a chain-by-chain question, but if a consumer calls a major chain and speaks to their on-staff dietitian, he or she should be able to identify which of the items on the menu don't contain the substance of concern. They're not going to give you the formulas, right, but they should be able to help you identify what are the safe items for you to order based on your allergy or intolerance.
I think that is excellent information for everyone to really take away tonight, to know that you can call. Because I actually get people who say, oh, I don't know about calling. They're a little timid and they're not really sure how they want to go about things. And, you know, in today's world, I think you have to ask questions. And I think that the restaurant industry being open and already being prepared for this and you giving that particular information, that's great. I would like you to just talk a little more about the world of healthy flavors, because I think that's a program that more people need to know more about. And I also want to just give me a second. I want to remind people to call in, and the call-in number is 347-855-8894. And remember, if you have a question, to press 1. But Amy, the world of healthy flavors, how did that come about? How did that come about just strictly from consumer preference, or did that come about from just the trending? Where was it? I mean.
Oh, Carol, I'm so glad you asked that question, because there's a great story to the history of Worlds of Healthy Flavors. Back in the early 2000s, we can all recall the low-carb diet craze, Atkins diet and whatnot, and people in the restaurant industry were calling leaders at the Culinary Institute of America and saying things like, I have a chain of pizza restaurants and nobody wants crust. How am I going to sell pizza without crust? Or I have an Italian restaurant, but nobody wants the bread basket. Nobody wants the pasta. They want everything carb-free. What am I supposed to do? Is this a short-term fad or a long-term trend? And am I going to be out of business in 6 months? And after a series of these conversations, leadership at the Culinary Institute of America said, we need to help the industry differentiate between short-term fads and science-based guidance for long-term trends. And that's when they started this partnership with the Harvard School of Public Health. So every January, a group of the top 50 restaurant chains, people in contract food service who do major operations in businesses and schools around the country, leaders from campus dining, 50 of these individuals are brought together every January, along with a group of nutrition scientists from Harvard and other institutions. We also invite consumer research specialists, communication professionals, and members of the food industry who supply restaurants. And we bring them together and we talk about what are the biggest concerns in terms of nutrition science and public health. We provide science-based guidance, and members of the industry also get a chance to tell about the great work they're doing, whether it's how they're reducing sodium, how they're adding more whole grains to the menus, what they're doing to get consumers to put more produce on the plate when they're making choices at restaurants. So Worlds of Healthy Flavors, now going into its 12th year, has had huge impact on the industry, giving them ways to make decisions about how to improve the quality of their menus based on science, but also while reacting to consumer demand.
Wow. That's a great story, Amy. Thank you for sharing that. You know, it's always interesting to find out what really happened behind the scenes, and it was really about what people were calling in and asking, and then how do you decipher that? That's pretty amazing. I think we're getting some questions on the blog, and we're getting a couple of call-ins. Usually I take questions a little bit later in the show. Would you guys mind if we took a question or two at the moment?
Sure.
Okay. We have a question on the blog that says, menus may have gluten-free items. Oh, this must be Susan. Susan, I think this goes to you. And then, Amy, I think this is a two-part question, and it's more operations on restaurants, but here it goes. Menus may have gluten-free items, but should I be concerned with pots and pans and utensils if I'm gluten-free? Go ahead, Susan.
Okay. Not, yes, there is a concern, absolutely. Not every restaurant will train its employees correctly. So if someone has a gluten sensitivity, sometimes they can get by with a little bit of gluten, but if somebody has celiac disease, they absolutely cannot. So if someone has celiac disease, I would encourage them to contact the restaurant manager or the chef and speak to them about what types of practices they utilize in their kitchen and make sure that there is no cross-contamination there.
Okay. And Amy, as far as that goes, I mean, operationally, I know this is more of an operations question in food service and restaurants, but you know, I would tend to believe that it's kind of difficult to get to that level of, but I'm sure there's been a lot of education that's gone out to the restaurants on those kinds of things. Do you want to maybe, if you can, talk about some of that?
Yeah, I mean, there has been extensive educational outreach efforts to the food service industry related to the topic of food allergies, and you know, it goes back to how front of the house, the manager and the servers interact with back of the house or the people in the kitchen. It goes back to how much training and retraining happens in that operation. There's a lot of turnover in restaurants, both front and back of the house. And so a manager who trains on something once a year is probably going to be missing out on people knowing all the policies and procedures for handling something like that. It's not easy. And, you know, larger organizations, again, they have more resources to devote to this. No publicly traded company wants a lawsuit over an issue like this. So they are going to be the ones who are going to be most militant about making sure that their consumers have a safe experience every time.
Well, and I would tend to think, too, that because the numbers are growing, it's more of a concern for them as well. And so, yeah, it would be very difficult. It would have to be in repetition and education, correct?
Absolutely. But, you know, I have to be honest with you. There is some there's some resistance in the industry because Hollywood in particular drives some of these diet crazes, and I'm using diet craze and gluten-free diets in air quotes, because there are people with celiac who absolutely have to have no gluten in their meal at a restaurant, but there are people who go in and because a certain celebrity is following that diet, he or she is going to order something gluten-free, and the server may hear a flippant comment as he or she walks away from the table, you know, I don't really have to eat gluten-free, but I'm just doing it because I'm on a diet, and that creates a kind of jaded perspective. So people who truly have an allergy or sensitivity, you know, have to be very serious in their correspondence with servers in a restaurant, with their communications with managers. One of the best practices I've seen is people who have pre-printed cards that say, this is my condition, these are the ingredients I cannot have, and then very respectfully say, please help me identify an item that is safe for me. And that pre-printed card shows you're serious about this. This is, you know, medically necessary.
You know, that's an excellent point, Amy. I don't think I ever really considered that. I mean, I considered the fact that there are fads out there, and especially as it relates to gluten, because I've even come across people that will say, oh, yeah, there's no gluten in this, or there is gluten in that, and they don't even really, they can't even give you a definition as to what gluten is. So anybody with a gluten intolerance and or celiac disease will tell you straight up what gluten is and where it is, right, Susan? But at a certain point, you're right. There are people who will follow a particular plan because someone on television said that's what I do, And I didn't consider the server point of view when they hear a flippant comment. And then, so yeah, that's an excellent point with the pre-printed cards and the ingredients. And I know that Susan, you work with a particular program, the LEAP program. Do you want to talk about that? Because I know that the LEAP program with the food sensitivities has a pre-printed card for people to carry with them. And I'm not sure that there are other tests out there like that. So do you want to give a couple minutes to that?
Sure. I utilize a food sensitivity test called the mediator release test. And once we get those test results back, we use those tests to implement a protocol that is anti-inflammatory, designed to reduce or improve symptoms of chronic inflammation like IBS or migraine or others. And after a patient gets tested, they do receive a card with some of their reactive foods. The problem is that you can just about react to any food in our food supply, and not just the food, but some of the preservatives or chemicals as well. So there's never going to be a test that's large enough to test for every potential reactive food. So a lot of patients may still go to a restaurant with their card and find that the food is still making them sick because there's something in there that wasn't tested. So the way that the LEAP protocol works, and the reason it's effective, is because we actually have them eat only tested foods for about 4 weeks. And if the patient is eating only their known safe foods, then by default, they're going to be avoiding all of those untested and potentially reactive items. But then after 4 weeks, when they return to the restaurant, they have to be especially careful about those unknown foods. And that's really where the challenge begins with the restaurant. So some restaurants are very good about preparing a meal with, if the patient specifies, I want a steak and all I want on my steak is salt and pepper. Many restaurants will cater to the client that way, but others cannot. So it involves a little bit of homework on the part of the patient when they're going to eat out.
Okay. Let me just do a check here. I'm going to put everybody on hold for just a second. Remind everybody, you're listening to the Whole Scoop Radio Show on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Carol Ferraci, a licensed registered dietitian and founder of Naturally Nutrition. You can check me out at www.naturallynutritioninc.com. Tonight we're listening to Eating Out, How Many of Us Really Have a Choice, with Amy Myrdal Miller, founder and president of Farmer's Daughter Consulting, an agriculture, food, and culinary communications firm, who was formerly with the Culinary Institutes of America, and Susan Linke, one of the country's leading authorities on food sensitivity and allergy. You can follow Amy's insights on farming, food, and flavor issues on Twitter at Amy Myrdal Miller, AmyMyrdalMiller, or at Amy@FarmersDaughterConsulting.com, and Susan at www.SusanLinke.com, and that's Susan, SusanLinke.com. That being said, ladies, Susan, I think you just said it as it relates to the food sensitivity and there's no test that tests for everything. I think that, Amy, you brought up the point where some people are, there are fads for different reasons and people follow things for different reasons just to follow other people. I think that's an excellent point. But I think it's also important, based on what Susan said, that you can be sensitive to a food at any point in time. And Susan, can you just give just some generalities of symptoms as it relates to sensitivities? Because some of these people who are following fads may be sensitive to things that they're not even aware of by virtue of symptoms that they're not attributing to foods.
Mm-hmm. Symptoms can be very varied, and what I mean by that is you have most of the immune system is in your gut, when you react to a food, that immune system sends out inflammatory chemicals or mediators throughout your bloodstream. So sometimes you might eat a food and feel the urge to take a nap, for example. You might feel really tired. You might get the digestive symptoms. Absolutely, that's what we typically expect. But sometimes we might get a headache or a migraine, or we might actually have muscle pain. As I mentioned, fatigue or the urge to take a nap. Sometimes we actually might have mood swings or crankiness. Those symptoms can be manifest even 3 days after you eat a meal. So they're not always going to be right after the meal, which makes food sensitivity very difficult to identify because you might have it 24, 48, 72 to 96 hours later. So people in general just know that they don't feel well. They don't have any energy. They wake up the next morning with diarrhea and don't know what caused it. So it's food sensitivities are definitely a challenge, but thankfully through the LEAP protocol and the mediator release test that I use, it does make it much easier to help identify those food sensitivities.
Great. We have another blog question. Question is there or are there any foods or supplements a person can take to counteract the sensitivities or build immune system to help prevent an adverse reaction? And I'm going to kind of fill in the blanks here because if I'm eating in a restaurant and like you said, Susan, there may be foods to which I'm reacting for which I wasn't tested, and I'm not sure, but I know what the symptoms are because I've dealt with this, or you know, other people have dealt with this. I'm trying to be a person that is sitting in the restaurant. Is there something that's out there that I can take to counteract it, or do I have to wait it out? And if I have to wait it out, generally, how long do the symptoms? How long the symptoms can last?
There are over-the-counter medications that somebody can take if they get a headache. For example, they can take an over-the-counter ibuprofen or whatever for the headache, or for the digestive symptom, they may have to take Pepto-Bismol or something along those lines. There's really not anything that you can take to counteract a food sensitivity symptom that's over-the-counter because it is an immune reaction, and it is delayed. So
you kind of have to let it run its course, huh?
You kind of do have to let it run its course. So the best thing to do is identify those food sensitivities and basically heal the gut, heal the immune system, so that in the long run, you're not developing new food sensitivities and you can overcome those sensitivities.
And, you know, I think, you know, those are really great questions, and thank you for blogging those in, because as people are sitting in a restaurant, and I think, Amy, you mentioned before that it's now part of our daily routines to eat in restaurants and to be a part of what is just our basic expectation, that some of these things are going to happen, but I think the fact that people do have more choices and that people can feel like they're eating healthier, and they actually are by virtue of all the work that you just described and all of the programs, the worlds of healthy flavor and everything that's going into that. But I got to tell you, there's a piece of information that I looked at that was just fascinating to me, and it's a pie chart, and the pie chart says that 27% of the people surveyed for looking at what the restaurant industry is having to gear toward says, I don't care much if healthy choices are on the menu and I usually eat out mainly for other reasons. 8% of those people said, I will go out of my way to eat a meal at a restaurant that provides healthy choices. That is usually a factor for choosing where to eat. And 26% said, I prefer when healthy choices are on the menu and they are equally important to other reasons. And 39% said, I prefer when healthy choices are on the menu, but I mainly choose a restaurant for other reasons. So I'm looking at that. I'm listening to Susan. I'm putting it together with the blog questions for people who really, truly have some allergies and sensitivities that have to pay attention. And I look at the restaurant industry on this pie chart and I go, my head is spinning on where to go next and how to do this. So I have to say that the work that you've done and that you continue to do on this is just absolutely commendable. And if there's anything that you want people to take away from some of the things that you're doing, please give us an idea.
Yeah, you know, in the work that we do, the area of programming for the Worlds of Healthy Flavors Conference that the food service industry always wants more of is consumer insights. And we consumers often say one thing and do another. One of the positive findings with consumer research as of late is that the number of consumers who want healthy items on menus and will order them when available and clearly identified, that number keeps growing. So there's a larger percentage of the population that expects to see healthy items on a menu, will order them, and will do what they say they want to do. But the other thing that makes this complex is we as individuals, our intentions change through the days. There's data that shows that a consumer with an intent to eat healthfully, to make a healthy choice at a restaurant, is more likely to do so at breakfast and lunch than at dinner. And there's something about the day that wears down, you know, our intentions, and we see the need to reward ourselves after a hard day of work, or we have a glass of wine or a beer at the beginning of the meal, and that reduces our inhibitions when it comes time to order the grilled versus fried item. So, you know, I'm glad you recognized how hard this work is for the restaurant industry. They want to respond to consumer demand for healthy items, but sometimes when those items are developed and put on menus, we as consumers don't order them. So it is complex, but I can attest to how dedicated the industry is, how many phenomenal nutrition professionals, registered dietitians like the three of us, are working behind the scenes daily with their culinary partners to increase the number of healthy options on menus. And I should also make the point that a large percentage of the industry is making these changes in a quiet, stealth way. They've learned some tough lessons from the past, that if you put an icon next to a menu item that clearly says this is the healthiest item, we consumers shy away from it. We think it won't taste as good. So now the industry is doing more to improve the quality of menu items, to make items better for us, but not telling us this information. They're just making what we call stealth changes, and it's proving quite effective.
That is so interesting. That's great. Susan, do you have anything to add to what Amy just said?
Well, I kind of have a question for Amy based on some observations that I have and a lot of the physicians that I work with also, and that is when we say healthy, you know, some of us perceive the word healthy in a different way. Because I work with food sensitivities, my brain is always thinking about ingredients, and especially preservatives and things like that. And one thing I've noticed is that when my clients travel abroad, their IBS improves or disappears, or their migraines or chronic headaches improve or disappear. And the minute they come back to the United States, their problems start all over again. So it's not just restaurant food. It's the food that we purchase in our grocery stores as well. So I'm just wondering, you know, what I wish for, if I had a wish list, it would be that we our restaurants would provide the same types of foods that we would use at home in terms of minimal preservatives and processing ingredients and things like that, so that when we do go order a chicken or green beans, we're really getting green beans and not you know, the preservatives that oftentimes we see in the can and things like that.
Yeah, Susan, I'm glad you brought this up. One of the trends that's happening in both the retail or grocery side of the industry and the food service or restaurant side of the industry is what they call clean label. And this is being very transparent of what are the ingredients, that everything listed on the ingredient panel is something you can easily recognize, and that there are fewer ingredients being used. So that chicken breast that we keep going back and talking to, you know, a lot of the industry is moving away from what are called pumped products, which are chicken products that are pumped with solutions with sodium. They make the chicken moister, more juicy, more delicious. They can cook a little bit longer on a grill and not get dried out. The industry is moving away from that because the consumer is demanding it. So we're going to see cleaner and cleaner ingredient labels at supermarkets. We're going to see it in the restaurant industry. But, you know, from the operations perspective of restaurants, some of the reasons why they use preservatives is a restaurant maybe is only getting a delivery once or twice a week, and you've got to have products that hold up well in the freezer, hold up well under refrigeration. Some items don't move very quickly, and oftentimes that's some of the healthier items, and they need to have longer shelf life. So it's a really, you know, it's a challenging space to work in from the operations side. Once you overcome, you know, finding out what your consumer wants, what's going to go into that menu item, how you're going to describe it on the menu, what kind of promotions you're going to put around it. Then the operations team comes in and says, hey, wait a minute, this is something that would require, you know, deliveries four times a week. We can only get into that restaurant twice a week. So, you know, the restaurant industry is exceedingly complex when you're talking about the chain restaurants. And it's even true on the independent side. You know, most restaurants don't have chefs that are going out to farmers markets and buying the ingredients every day. A lot of them depend on food service distributors who may deliver once or twice a week. So, you know, to reassure you, the industry is working on that issue of preservatives, fewer ingredients, fewer things added to what should be whole foods. But there are oftentimes very good reasons why they're there in the first place.
Great. Okay, ladies, I got to do another identifier here. You are listening to the Whole Scoop Radio Show on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Carol Ferraci, licensed registered dietitian and founder of Naturally Nutrition. You can find me at www.naturallynutritioninc.com. Tonight we're talking about eating out, how many of us really have a choice, with Amy Myrdal Miller, founder and president of Farmer's Daughter Consulting, and Susan Linke, who is one of the country's leading authorities on food sensitivity. You can find Amy on Twitter at Amy Myrdal Miller, AmyMyrdalMiller, or at Amy@FarmersDaughterConsulting.com, and Susan at www.SusanLinke.com, SusanLinke.com. I think we're going to take a question. We've got somebody that's been pretty much waiting the whole time. I'm going to take this question, a caller. It's caller 8796. You're on the air.
Hi. First of all, I want to say great show. Every question I've had listening has been answered almost. But now I'm to the point I was going to speak about preservatives. You brought that up. I've never been tested for allergies or sensitivities, but I have noticed when I go out to eat, there's certain types of foods with preservatives that I don't react well to. So I've kind of learned to ask questions, or, you know, especially with meatballs, you know, do you make them here, or are they frozen? Are they fresh? Are they frozen? And it's very important because I get really, really sick. But that brings me now, since you've covered that pretty much, don't you think it's the consumer's responsibility to just try to steer away from things that they know are not good for them, and that they kind of have to use their own judgment, you know, because a lot of people don't know the difference between an allergy and a sensitivity. And I'm not really clear if I know the big difference.
Okay.
That's true. It is the buyer's, ultimately, it is the person's responsibility to take care of their own health. But I do appreciate the restaurant industry taking steps to accommodate the growing realization that more and more people have allergies and sensitivities, and meet us halfway, because if I want to go out to eat, it's I don't want it to be so difficult that I can't go out to eat. So I really do appreciate the fact that things are being made cleaner and easier for me to make that choice.
Do you have a certain restaurants that are top-notch chain restaurants that you would recommend?
Is that a question for Amy or for me?
For whoever can answer that question.
I don't know if anybody wants to actually... if you're not comfortable with answering that question on air, that's fine. Maybe we could blog some choices later on. I don't know how you feel about
right.
that, both of you.
Just
yeah?
stir the
okay.
consumers in the right direction, maybe?
Yeah. I think we could probably blog those answers a little bit later with, some perspective choices. And we'll just give some perspective. But I think it's important too. And Susan, maybe you would agree that as it relates to the chain restaurants, they've done their homework. I mean, Amy just described that they continue to do their homework. So I think it goes back to the server and the managers and asking the appropriate questions. And I think caller, as you just said, maybe the consumer. Responsibility of asking the appropriate questions would give you all the answers that you need, but maybe we could try to answer your question a little differently later.
Thank you.
Do you have anything? I mean, do you guys have anything to add to that, Amy or
well,
Susan?
Well, there are some groups like the gluten intolerance group, for example, who are on a mission to train restaurant personnel in the area of gluten sensitivity and or celiac disease, and on their website they have restaurants that have gone through training. There's apps for Find Me Gluten Free, for example, and things like that. So there's more and more apps that you can get for your phone and that would help you make those decisions. It's hard, because there's so many restaurants that are regional, not necessarily national, to find a one-stop shop source for finding those restaurants. So I think wherever you live, finding a few restaurants that you take the time and trouble to go visit with the manager and speak to them about their choices, so that you know which restaurants you can visit on a regular basis.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for calling in. We've got a blog question that it says, and I'm just reading it verbatim. Thank you, Amy, for your passion for public health and working for positive changes. I've noticed positive changes on many menus the last few years. My question is, has there ever been a survey to see if people would rather pay more for food if ingredients are organic and or if ingredients are all or mostly non-GMO? If so, what were the results?
That's a great question. So I have seen some data on the organic question. I haven't seen data on the GMO question as it relates to restaurants. And the question on organic is a very small segment of the population is willing to pay more in a restaurant if something is labeled organic. Now, the term that consumers state they are willing to pay more for is local. And the restaurant industry in particular, the independently operated restaurants have responded to that in a very positive way, promoting more local farms, locally sourced ingredients. So that's been one trend that we've seen growing in the industry. And it's spurred by chefs' commitment to partnering with local producers and the consumer's interest in supporting local food systems.
Wow. Okay. We've got another caller. Caller 4977. You're on the air.
Hi, Carol.
Hi.
I have a question. Do any of the large allergy groups have an affiliation with the new healthy menu program to make it easier to order in restaurants?
I think that question's open to either one of you. Amy, are you aware of any affiliations?
I am not. I'm not.
Okay.
I'm not either. No, I'm not either.
Okay. So I think maybe that's something that we could maybe do. The whole scoop can research a little bit more and see if we can look at that further and maybe do another show of some sort of where we are with those affiliations. Thank you for calling. You have another question?
No, but thank you, and I have enjoyed the program.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate the call. Ladies, we're almost out of time. I want to kind of wrap up a little bit. If you were to make, say, 3 points that you wanted to make tonight that you didn't get to, or you thought maybe you'd like to elaborate a little bit on, and you give each of you just a little bit of time, say three to five points that you'd like to make, just in bullet format maybe. Amy, you want to start?
Yeah, I mean, I want listeners to remember that the restaurant industry is very committed to providing more healthful options. And when you as a diner try something new on a menu and you have a great experience, let your server know, let the manager know. Oftentimes we as diners only complain if there's a problem. We don't as often provide praise, and the praise has huge impact on further effort and intent. So share your good feedback as well as areas for improvement.
Okay. Great. Susan?
Well, I just, since I specialize in the area of food sensitivities, my observation is that people suffer for many years without really knowing what is making them sick, and they go to a typical or traditional allergist and they get allergy testing, and they may find out that they're allergic to two or three things and that is it, when in reality, when someone has symptoms like irritable bowel syndrome or chronic migraine or chronic headaches or many others, the allergy testing will not usually give them those answers that they're looking for. So if you do suffer with those conditions and you don't want to be dependent on medication the rest of your life, then perhaps food sensitivity testing would provide the answers that you need in order to improve your symptoms and help you get started on a healthy life.
And in order to find those food sensitivity testing, they can contact you or me, right?
They can contact you or me, or if you look on the internet under Certified Leap Therapist and put the name of your city or town, you can usually find, there is a website called HealthProfs or HealthProfessionals.com, and a lot of the Certified Leap Therapists, which are dietitians nationwide that specialize in food sensitivities, you can usually find one that way as well.
Okay, great. Ladies, I can't thank you enough for being here tonight. This has been a great show. I think there's a whole lot more to talk about, and I think that if you're willing to come back, we can maybe gear the show in more of a specific direction for both areas. I would love to have you back if you're willing. And I want to remind everybody that our next show is going to be May 14th. It's going to be Your Mind, Your Conscious Conduit to Maintaining Health with Dr. Romila Mushtag, or Dr. Romy. She's a physician, speaker, and certified life coach who believes that where medicine meets mindfulness is where you'll find her. with Claire Maurer, a licensed mental health counselor who focuses on conscious behavior techniques, including EMDR. So that should be a real interesting show on how you can control things that are happening with your health by just being mindful. Susan, Amy, thank you so very much. It's been a great show, and I'd love
thank
to have you,
you
back.
Thank you, Carol.
Thank you, and we're going to say goodnight. And thanks, everybody, for joining us. Good night.